Welcome to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. Looking forward to getting you up to speed on everything you need to know about the NFL heading into Week 2. I hope by now you're subscribed to the show on iTunes, but if not, head over and get it done. Also, leave us some feedback, as like NFL players tell us every chance they get, we're also trying to get better every day here on the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I want to thank our fill-in producer, Jason Frommer, our Jimmy Garoppolo for today, as he fills in for the great Dan Mott. Jimmy G, or Jason P, how are you doing today, bud?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for that intro, Arthur. I appreciate that. Doing pretty good over here.
Outstanding. And you have big shoes to fill, because Mr. Mott always takes great care of us spinning the dials, but I have the utmost confidence in you. If you could do anything like a Jimmy G fill-in, I think we're going to be in pretty good shape.
I think I can handle that. I don't know if I'm going to be as good as Dan, but I think I can get you guys through the day for sure.
We have the utmost confidence in Jason, and thank you again to him. And so let's kind of get into the Week 2 action. To help me break it all down, I am really excited to welcome in Ty Shalter onto the Pro Football Weekly Podcast, making his debut appearance. And a few weeks back, I had Andrew Garda on the show, and I've decided I want to bring in as many of our Pro Football Weekly correspondents as I can to help me, to help kind of drive the ship. And hopefully, there's two reasons for this. A, I hope that they're going to make me sound smarter than I am. And B, I hope that they're just going to talk more, so you guys have to hear less of my mindless dribble. So I hope that sounds good. And in addition to his standing column, The Hot Read, on Pro Football Weekly, in that Hot Read, Ty kind of gives you the most pertinent things to be looking for each week in the NFL. So you'll find that, I believe it goes up on Thursdays. You can find his Week 2 Hot Read on ProFootballWeekly.com right now. In addition to writing for PFW, Ty writes for Vice Sports and The Comeback, and I believe he's also a podcast host on SiriusXM. Like I said, we're bringing in ringers from here on out, so make sure you don't miss out. And on that note, let's go ahead and bring Ty into the program. Ty, thank you so much for joining us today. How is it going?
Oh, my pleasure. It's going great. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. I was just telling the listeners that my goal is to bring on all of our new PFW correspondents / writers. Hopefully you guys can make me sound a little bit better, because I kind of am just winging it most of the time on this show. And I introduced our listeners to your Hot Read, your standing column that gets everyone up to speed on the Week 2 action. So I thought we'd start out by, and I certainly hope they'll still head to ProFootballWeekly.com and check out your work, but I thought we'd kind of run through what you've highlighted for the week. And your matchup to watch actually was the game last night, and this is convenient. I'm going to assume that you watched. I was actually out at Wrigley watching the Cubs try and clinch. They didn't do it on their own, but thanks to the Cardinals, still got it done. So I didn't see much of the game last night, but I was following on my phone. What can you tell us, A, about your matchup here with Darrell Revis and Sammy Watkins? It looks like that really was not one of the biggest keys in this one.
Well, it was interesting because they didn't end up matched up against each other very often, just the way the game plans, both offensive and defensive, worked out. But then, of course, neither of them had a very good night either. The whole thing was set up in terms of, okay, you know, Sammy Watkins was very quiet in week one. Darrell Revis had some bumps, some notable, miscues in week one. Okay, right. Which of them is going to recover? Which of them is going to have the better game? And then it turns out that not only did they not match up against each other well, neither of them had a good game. Sammy Watkins, again, very, very quiet. Only a handful of targets, handful of catches. And then Darrell Revis was very visibly torched by Marquise Goodwin, which, you know, lots of people aren't as fast as Marquise Goodwin, but then lots of us aren't all pro cornerbacks making gobs of money per year. Right now, Brandon Marshall came in after the game and told a booing chorus of Bills fans that Darrell Revis is still the best cornerback in the world. But right now you have to look at this and go, okay, Revis Island, where all the best receivers in the league disappear, may not be a thing anymore. And that kind of changes the math for the Jets defense in terms of personnel and who they commit to what side of the field. And it's not good math. It's not a positive change. So my co-host on BR Radio, Jason Cole, tweeted out during the game, a source told me that Revis really did not put in the work this offseason, and it's going to show. And so far, ominous signs indicate that that's the case.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's the goods right there. But before I follow up on that, let me, you kind of said something that piqued my interest here. Are you telling me that Darrell Revis is now being relegated to kind of Josh Normanville, half the field? I'm very surprised to hear. Or do you think that it was Todd Bowles deciding maybe Sammy Watkins with his surgically repaired foot isn't the best way to kind of delegate our top corner, assuming if we're even still calling Darrell Revis the Jets' top corner?
Right. And I think that's the case, is that he went and looked and said, okay, you know, Sammy Watkins is maybe not the biggest threat. And maybe what they've done is decided that, you know, Revis is not just going to mirror the top guy, which mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of debate about that. There's a lot of fuss made over whether your top corner mirrors the top receiver. That doesn't necessarily mean one thing or another. It's a defensive philosophy. It's a defensive mindset. It's a defensive coordinator's choice. And, you know, some guys are better. You know, some corners are I don't want to say right and left-handed, but, you know, some corners are just better naturally on one side than the other. And overall, if it's a scheme fit, you go, okay, put him on the side that he's best. He tries to shut down whoever it is, and we scheme around everything else. So maybe it's a change in how they use him, and maybe that reflects his age a little bit. I will say, you know, he got roasted by AJ Green last week. And I said at Pro Football Weekly, he's been roasted by AJ Green in the past. Lots of people have. Green may just have his number, and outside of, you know, the one big play that Revis gave up, you know, it wasn't as though Revis was the worst corner on the field or a defensive liability or anything like that. It's just an eyebrow raising, like, oh, well, maybe he's not disappear whoever you put him on anymore.
Sure. I'm a huge Cubs fan, Ty, and I was thinking watching last Thursday night's game, or I guess what, no, it was Monday night's game, and how they didn't use Josh Norman against Antonio Brown. Everyone, of course, made a big deal about it, and of course, I related it to John Lester getting the biggest free agent contract ever and not being able to throw to the bases. So when you say that some corners aren't ambidextrous, I kind of have sympathy, but not when these guys are making $75 million and whatever Darrell Revis is getting, but I don't want to get bogged down on that. That was very fascinating to hear you say, or to hear your colleague point out that he was hearing Revis didn't put the work in. I mean, coming off the year he had last year, I know he had wrist surgery in the offseason too. That kind of is, you know, that kind of takes me aback a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, there's also that's been done before. I mean, it goes back to, I think about the 94 NFC Championship game when they put Deion Sanders when Sanders was with the 49ers, they put him on Alvin Harper and then doubled Michael Irvin. And, you know, Cowboys are totally unprepared for that and took Alvin Harper completely out of the game and then doubled Irvin and made it harder. So there's a lot of precedent to that. It's not just, oh, like if you're the best corner, you're going to shadow the best wide receiver no matter what, and anything else is baloney. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to these defensive coordinators are trying to win football games. And if you decide, well, if we're going to lose, we're going to lose the manly way. Okay, well, then you lose your job. You know, like...
No doubt. And hey, that's a good segue, Ty. I hate to be all doom and gloom, but what exactly is Rex Ryan's immediate future? Because it looks like it's not going to get better in the short term. And obviously, he was, you know, at least from my vantage point, he headed into this season on as warm of a seat as really any coach. Maybe there's one or two, you know, with a hotter seat. But Rex has to win now, and the Bills are now off to another tough start.
Yeah, and it may get tougher given their schedule. Honestly, this never made sense for me in terms of a fit. You know, you think about Buffalo, you think about this huge regional fan base, you know, that prides themselves on tradition and doing things the right way, and class and pride and loyalty, and, you know, supporting the team through thick and thin, you know. And then you bring in Rex Ryan, who's, you know, loud and a great quote, and rough around the edges, and likes bringing in guys who are loud and rough around the edges. And he immediately collected, you know, basically all the most rough around the edges free agents possible. And I just went, I don't know that this fan base is going to enjoy supporting this team, especially if this team is not winning. And pretty much right off the bat from last year forward, this Rex Ryan Bills team has been less than the sum of its parts. And again, we saw that last night where you've got talented playmakers, big plays, but no consistency, no unity, And you wonder if there's three defensive coordinators, basically, between Rex Ryan, Rob Ryan, and Dennis Thurmond. Are there too many chefs ruining the soup? Is this too complicated? You know, you look at this team and you go, okay, there's a lot of options in terms of defensively, a lot of keys to read, a lot of voices in your ear, a lot of things you're supposed to be doing. And last year, Mario Williams was very vocal about it was limiting his ability to do what he liked to do. And you wonder if, you know, they're not putting players in the best position to win. Like you said, the seat was hot coming into the season, and a couple of rough, ugly losses to two teams that they should be competitive with, if not beating, if they're going to make the playoffs. This is a very rough start, and it could get rougher.
Yeah, and just the way that, you know, the offense doesn't show up in week one and then the defense doesn't show up in week two, definitely pretty troubling. I don't want to spend the whole show talking about the Bills, obviously, and not really the AFC East either, but just kind of quickly, what do you think? Because the Jets, talk about a tough, you know, first 5-6 week stretch. It seems almost as if the Jets needed to have this win last night. Just your assessment of A, how big it was for them. It looks like Ryan, or from what I saw, you know, really just mostly box score, what Ryan Fitzpatrick did to bounce back, and just kind of your take on where the Jets are right now after a big win.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm high on the Jets. You know, I think the Ryan Fitzpatrick drama was really all anybody talked about. And this is still a really talented offense. I think Devin Smith isn't at full speed yet, but I think when he is, that combination of Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, and Devin Smith is going to be very, very tough to stop. Eric Decker got in the end zone again. And, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a good quarterback. He throws the ball downfield. He makes big plays happen. He's a perfect fit for this offense and these receivers. They're going to put up points. Matt Forte, you know, didn't put up a high yards per carry, but was very effective when he needed to be. And I think he's, again, great fit for the offense. You know, the question mark really is the defense, but I think this Bengals team, I think we're going to go back, and I said this before week one, you look at this Jets-Bengals matchup in week one and you go, these are two teams that could very easily be playoff teams or better. You know, this could be an AFC wild card against an AFC North division champion. I think the Bengals are very, very strong. And so losing by that little tiny bit at the very end, you know, may not be, you know, basically a missed field goal. It may not be the shame it looked like coming out of week one, come and handle, you know, I don't want to say handle the Bills, but handle the Bills. And now looking forward for the rest of the year, you're right. They needed this win. They got this win. And I think they're going to be able to keep pace. You know, the Patriots, I don't know if anybody's going to be able to keep pace with them because they handled their biggest challenge with ease. And it's just going to get easier for them. It's all downhill for the Patriots. But I think the Jets are going to be in the mix for that wild card and have the talent to surprise some people.
Yeah, they're going to be a fascinating team for sure. I was so impressed with the work Todd Bowles did in year one, despite the way it ended. So it'll be fun to watch for sure. Ty, let's move on to your game of the week and the Pro Football Weekly hot read. And I agree, it's going to be a very, very interesting matchup for a couple of different reasons. As you mentioned, obviously the Broncos, great defense, and the Colts clearly have their mojo back with Andrew Luck. But then, of course, on the other side of the ball, the Colts look like they could be historically bad on defense. And we just don't know what's up with Trevor Simeon. But I guess I'll start with, do you think Andrew Luck is safe heading into Denver after what we saw last Thursday night? That was pretty scary to watch the MVP just get absolutely battered.
Yeah, absolutely. As we saw last night, they had Tyrod Taylor go through the concussion protocol after he ran up the middle and got converged upon by three Jets, and he looked like he was out for a second, maybe. I thought so at full speed and went, ooh, is he okay? And then he got back up. He popped up and it seemed okay, but the spotters called him in. Ad Hockley walks him off the field. You know, he goes through the protocol. He's back in two plays later. I'm like, great, that's what we want to see. You know, we want to see these guys checked out. So I feel like the league is going to be very, very, very closely watching the Broncos, especially this first game. And yeah, Andrew Luck, he's another guy who runs around and is athletic and sometimes puts himself in positions that other quarterbacks can't because of his athleticism and his size. So they're going to be watching him very closely. But like I said on Pro Football Weekly, this is a Colts team that looks absolutely where they were last year, or, you know, 2 years ago, and able to throw the ball, score points almost at will. Andrew Luck looked great against the Lions defense. Maybe that's the Lions defense. But I think it's more Andrew Luck, T.Y. Hilton, Dante Moncrief, you know, the ability. Dwayne Allen was healthy and producing. So that's a great, great combination going into Denver. And again, We've got Denver's defense. They look like they haven't lost an inch since last year, since we last saw them. They're violent, fast, physical, and able to cover. They're very, very skilled. And now Shane Ray with his emergence, you know, they've got three right now. DeMarcus Ware hasn't really fallen off at all. So between Von Miller, Shane Ray, and DeMarcus Ware, that's very, very difficult for a porous Colts offensive line to stop.
Yeah, just a reminder to our listeners that Wade Phillips was unemployed 2 years ago, and how that's possible, I will never know, because I agree with Ty. Despite all the losses, that Broncos defense still absolutely humming. You're right about that. Let's go on the other side of the coin here quickly. Yeah. What do you think of Trevor Siemian, his debut, and what he does for an encore? You just mentioned he may not, you know, find a lot of resistance with the Colts, but maybe more big picture. What did you think about Simeon's first, not audition, but what he was able to put on film initially?
Yeah, absolutely. And Siemian, throughout the preseason, I was watching this and I'm like, okay, here's a guy who is executing the short stuff, the easy stuff, at a very high level. He's executing, you know, the 5 yard outs, the quick slants, the screen passes. He's placing the ball very well. And for a team that is all catch and run guys, you know, you look at Demaryius Thomas, you look at Emmanuel Sanders, you look at CJ Anderson. All three of these guys are incredibly dangerous in space. You give them the ball, give them a chance to make one move, make one guy miss, and it's a 15, 20-yard gain. And what's the key to yards after the catch? It's placement, it's accuracy, and fundamentals. And Siemian is just very, very meticulous, executing those plays very well, putting it right where he needs to put it. And then, of course, it didn't hurt, I think, that the Broncos were going up against two rookie corners on the Carolina side, which I think people kind of glossed over. You know, oh, Norman is gone, but they still get... They started two rookies at left and right corner, and so that's a big deal. I don't know that Gary Kubiak is going to be able to continue to scheme around Simeon's limitations downfield for 16 games. I don't know if they're going to be able to keep beating the very best in the NFL, you know, be an AFC title contender, a Super Bowl contender, just painting within those very narrow lines. But I don't think they're going to get, like you said, much resistance against the Colts. I haven't seen whether Vontae Davis is going to be able to play this week, but they were without three of their starting four defensive backs against the Lions. And Greg Toler is gone, obviously. So again, not much there in the back seven, not much resistance. And all Siemian has to do is dump it off to any of these three guys, and it's a potential big gain.
Yeah, it's funny. I think the Colts secondary may be looking for those Panthers rookie corners right now if they could get them, right? Just given the state of the Indianapolis cornerback room is pretty rough, obviously. But yeah, that'll be a fun one to watch, and we'll have to see. I know T.Y. Hilton was dealing with an injury. Demaryius Thomas also dealing with an injury late in the week. So certainly we hope those big play receivers are available for their quarterbacks. Ty, let's move on. And there's a couple other games that before I kind of continue on in your column, I just want to get your quick take on, because from my vantage point, I think the other big games of the week are within the division, and the Bengals and the Steelers, the Steelers. The Steelers are hosting the Bengals, And then the Vikings, of course, are cutting the ribbon on US Bank Stadium by hosting the Packers. Let's start in the NFC North. What do you think? I assume it's going to be Sam Bradford. Is that what you assume? And what do you anticipate in this kind of rematch of that Week 17 NFC North Championship game from last year?
Actually, you know, I hadn't checked to see it yet if they were going to do Sam Bradford. I thought they were going to stay with Sean Hill one more week at least. But I'm Googling right now, and you're absolutely right. It looks like they're he's.
I mean, Zimmer's not going to tell us. Yeah, Zimmer said he might not even tell his own team. So I know we're kind of.
I really thought it'd be three. Sorry, what?
We're left to speculate here. Zimmer said he wouldn't even tell his own team what quarterback was going to be playing. So.
Oh my gosh. Well, and that's the thing is with Sam Bradford, you know, this is a huge verbiage change. He's coming from going back to this old school Norv Turner style, play calling, which is completely different from what he was doing in Philadelphia. So he's got to relearn all the concepts with a totally different way of calling plays in the huddle. To do that in, 2 weeks is incredibly hard. But Sean Hill gave them very, very little in week one against the Titans, which, no disrespect intended to Dick LeBeau, but that's, that's not a all-star caliber defense right there. So, for me, you look at that team and go,
you've got to do something better than that. You're not going to win. You can't rely on two defensive touchdowns a week, especially against a team like the Titans. You got to be able to get some offense. If they can get Sam Bradford ready, even with a limited playbook or a diet type playbook, go out there, try and throw the ball downfield a little bit. You've got Stephon Diggs. You've got some guys. You got Laquon Treadwell, guys that can get out there and make plays. You got to do that, or you're not going to be able to win games in the NFL.
And did you see any of the Packers Jaguars, and they're kind of turning the page on what was a dismal and very unusual offensive season for the Packers last year? What do you think about kind of where they're at heading into this big game Sunday night?
Yeah, and all these week one games, it's so tough because we're trying to triangulate between what we thought going into the season, what we see in this week one. What's an outlier? What's strange? You know, what are we going to look back on and go, oh, that was a sign of things to come. You know, we should have noticed right away. And oh, wow, that really was not how things were going to go. Look at the Packers and Jaguars. We expected the Jaguars to take a step forward, be a little bit friskier, and they were. But it still kind of looks to me more like this is going to be the Blake Bortles, Allen Robinson show again, especially with Chris Ivory out. I thought he was going to be a big part of what would make the Jaguars better and tougher to deal with, bring more balance to that offense. Didn't happen. Going on the road and getting a win. And really, it was another one of those. I think there are a lot of games that looked close at the end where you go, okay, in the first half, this was no contest. In the second half, it got close. And then the team that was leading all the way ended up winning. And I think over the course of the season, we're going to see, the Packers are definitely among the class of the NFC. And the Jaguars may be feisty, but I still think they're at least a year away from putting all of that talent together.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And not a good, a pretty tough first couple of weeks for Gus Bradley, having to, of course, host the Packers and then go cross country to a Chargers team that might be as desperate as they are. So that'll be a fascinating one to watch, too. But, Ty, what do you think? I'm guessing it's going to be chippy. We can safely say that at Heinz Field. Do you think the Bengals have learned anything from their classic meltdowns? And do you think anything can stop this Steelers offense, even as pieces continue to seemingly disappear and Ben Roethlisberger seemingly doesn't care because he still has Antonio Brown and D'Angelo Williams?
Yeah, I pegged Steelers Washington as the game of the week last week, and it was the only game. I mean, not counting the later Monday night game, but it was the only clunker of the week because Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown just had their way with the Washington defense. And yes, D'Angelo Williams was incredible too. And this is a guy. I mean, D'Angelo Williams has been defying the odds and Father Time for two or three years already. So it's incredibly impressive what he's doing. As the Steelers continue to get pieces back. That having been said, Ben, even at his best, has been up and down a little bit. There are nights where he'll throw for six touchdowns and you go, oh, he's a wizard. He's, beyond human. He's just the most incredible quarterback ever. And then there are weeks when, things aren't clicking or he's holding on to the ball too long, taking sacks, and you go, ooh, maybe Ben's starting to get old. And again, it can go week to week. You never quite know. The Bengals looked very, very impressive all throughout the preseason, week one. And again, Andy Dalton, he had a rough couple of early drives. It looked like he was going at about half speed, and then the Jets got ahead and everything just clicked. And Andy Dalton was phenomenal for the last two and a half quarters or so. And, this is just a team that's got an incredible amount of talent. They don't miss Mohamed Sanu or Marvin Jones at all, which is shocking given how well Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones are playing in their new spots. So, just next man up, more guys, launch it downfield. Pitch and catch with AJ Green, and I thought Washington would be able to throw the ball very well against the Steelers secondary. And keep in mind, this is a Steelers team that just traded for Justin Gilbert because they need that, and yet nothing doing. So it'll be feisty. It'll be a must watch game. I do like the Bengals to win it, but you never know. If the Steelers surprised the heck out of me last week, and they could do it again.
Yeah, it was interesting to see Keith Butler take that really patient, almost passive approach defensively against Kirk Cousins in Washington. We'll see if it's that way again. It's funny when you're talking about Trevor Siemian and ball placement and letting his guys run after the catch, and I'm digressing here, but Kirk Cousins was pretty much the opposite of that in his 2016 debut. So they've got some things to figure out there in Washington as well. But Ty, just spending a couple more minutes here with Ty Shalter, Pro Football Weekly contributor. Can also find his work at Vice Sports and The Comeback. And you said you're a co-host with Jason Cole on a Bleacher Report radio as well, correct, Ty?
Yeah, that's right. Sirius XM Channel 83, Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern. We break down all the games coming up and what's happening in the week, news analysis. Sometimes Jason breaks news. You know, we talk about all that, so we take calls, that kind of a thing. So lots of fun. BR Radio's NFL Inside Read.
Nice. Well, you'll have a new listener because I'm enjoying this so much. I'm going to have to go check out what else you're doing. But we got just a few more minutes here with Ty, and let's keep getting through his column. I'll skip the dud of the week because it's probably the dud of the week. But Ty, what do you think?
Right.
And I cover the NFC North for USA Today Sports Weekly in addition to my Pro Football Weekly responsibilities. So I'm selfishly wanting you to tell me a little bit more about this Kerry Hyder the Detroit Lions have added to their already deep defensive line stable. What can you tell us about him? And maybe what he means for a D that is still a little bit in transition, but does certainly have some weapons.
Yeah, very interesting guy. Kerry Hyder signed by the New York Jets in 2014, undrafted free agent defensive lineman out of Texas Tech. He spent 2 years on the Jets practice squad, you know, kind of waiting for a spot to open up on the deepest D line in the NFL, basically. It didn't happen. And then this January, the Lions signed him off the Jets practice squad. And I believe I looked this up when his agent called him to tell him he didn't believe it. He's like, what? No way. That didn't happen. No, the Lions didn't sign him. So the Lions signed him. And again, we're also talking about he's a 270-pound defensive end, kind of a weird kind of tweener, you know, for the 3-4 scheme that the Jets were running, comes into the Lions. And, you know, nobody really talked about him all throughout camp. Nobody was really that interested in him. Then this preseason, he's really, really active, gets more reps, I think, in just about each successive game. In the fourth game against the Bills, he gets 3 sacks, which is obviously ridiculous. It's the fourth preseason game. You don't know. He does make the team. He does make the rotation. And then in week one, he sacks Andrew Luck twice. You know, big step up from Cardale Jones to Andrew Luck, but he was able to hunt Andrew Luck down, get 2 sacks, and now he's going to turn around and face Marcus Mariota. So, you know, Mariota doesn't drop back as often as Luck, but he runs around a little bit. Very curious to see how much Kerry Hyder gets in terms of reps and how well he does. You know, if he gets another sack or gets a couple more pressures, you go, okay, this guy suddenly is a player, and as you said, adds to an already deep Lions defensive line, and that needs to be deep, it looks like, because the secondary really didn't cover the Colts very well.
Yeah, and you know, it seems to be a good fit, not only because, you know, a guy that I had billed as a potential defensive player of the year in Ziggy Ansah, no one gives Devin Taylor the respect he deserves, and Terrell Austin probably doesn't get the credit he deserves for the way he maximizes his pieces. So it will be fun to follow Kerry Hyder. And just because, Ty, I know you have I believe a pretty intimate relationship with the Lions, can you tell us quickly, can Matthew Stafford sustain what he's doing right now? Because it's absolutely insane.
Yeah, he can. And you're right. Lifelong Lions fan. I wrote The Lions in Winter, which was an independent Lions blog for years, as a precursor to all this. And, you know, I've seen that potential within him. We've seen him move to his second and third and fourth progressions. And, you know, I was one of the people going, there could be a Patrick Ewing theory happening with Calvin Johnson, where if he sits down and executes the offense, as opposed to short circuiting everything to throw it deep to Calvin every, you know, 3, 4, 5 downs. As long as he minds his P's and Q's, his footwork, his accuracy, that's always held him back. But that 2011 year where he had those incredible stats, he flashed the ability to do it. Jim Bob Cooter, whatever it is, he's in Matthew Stafford's ear. They're working hand in glove, and he's got a panoply of options, and he's using them all. So as long as he can keep progressing through reads and not lock on one guy, he absolutely has the talent to keep doing this.
It's going to be a fun offense to watch, and maybe 2 up-and-coming coordinators. Obviously, Terrell Austin has already had his handful of head coaching opportunity or interviews for vacancies, and maybe Jim Bob Cooter won't be too far behind if he can continue this. So will be fun to watch. And Ty, the last little bit you have for us on this week's Pro Football Weekly, a little look ahead to the Arizona Cardinals, or kind of a look back to how they maybe we're snoozing a bit versus the Patriots got caught a little bit off guard by Jimmy G. What do you think why that might be different this week with a pretty dangerous offense coming to town in Jameis Winston, Dirk Cutter and company?
Yeah, absolutely. And Bruce Arians is a guy where, number one, you know, he doesn't stand on ceremony. He certainly is not going to rest on his laurels.
You know, this is a right. team that he knows is good enough to go to the Super Bowl. This has been for a couple of years now, honestly. And I don't think they're going to leave any stone unturned in preparing for Jameis Winston. And, you know, Dirk Koetter and Jameis Winston had a great opening week. I think they've made the jump. I think Jameis is going to continue to produce with those weapons week in, week out. But I think, you know, the Cardinals are going to come prepared to play. And again, I'm not sure that they were, given how many people were out. I think they thought they'd have an easier time against Garoppolo. And I think Bruce Arians is going to go to the woodshed and really, really come up with some better game plans and get his troops fired up. I mean, he's got to, because this is the kind of team that you've got to beat if you're going to win 12, 13, 14 games and go back to the, you know, go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it's funny, Ty, because we talked a little bit about, you know, Gary Kubiak's offense and getting guys in position to run after the catch. It's the same way in Washington. Well, I'll tell you what, they might be in the minority now. It's this way in Pittsburgh, too. But in Tampa Bay and Arizona, you have got two legitimate big strike vertical offenses. So this should be fun to watch these guys go down the field. And I have to think, you know, Bruce Arians is probably in the back of his mind going to be drooling a little bit over Jameis Winston, wouldn't you think?
You know, yes and no. I think James,
I mean, how much longer does Carson Palmer have? You know, I mean, he's got to be thinking that a little bit.
Okay, that's what you meant. I thought you meant in terms of, like, oh, we'll have an opportunity to really...
No. Just his skill set and how it matches what he wants to do. Right.
Yes. Okay, I got you. Yeah, absolutely. He'll covet Jameis Winston. Carson Palmer, you wonder what the succession plan is there. He's a guy that for a couple years has been on... So what happens when Carson Palmer goes away? Watch. And I believe Drew Stanton came out and said, hey, they said they'd let me compete for the job. you know, I'm sure that's true. But you have to start wondering at what point they start planning for the future a little bit. And we've seen that every other place, you know, New Orleans has tried and failed already with Garrett Grayson, a couple other spots. So maybe add Arizona to the list of teams that's going to be hunting around in that first, second round range for a quarterback, no matter what happens this year.
And I guess just last question, I'm keeping it a little long, I apologize, but because we hit on Carson Palmer, do you think that is Palmer showing chinks in the armor? Do you think this will be another big year for Carson? I think he's, 36 now and coming off his best statistical season of his career. What do you anticipate for the long haul this year from Palmer in that offense?
Yeah, great question. I wanted, as an addendum, just in case anybody out there is thinking that, you know, the Cardinals might try and trade for... You're not getting Jameis out of Tampa Bay unless you, you know, kidnap Jason Light and put him in the basement. There's no way you're getting Jameis Winston out of Tampa Bay. So unless Bruce wants to coach the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he's not going to get a chance to have Jameis Winston. Carson Palmer, you know, obviously we saw last year in that great MMQB piece, you know, just how rigorously he prepares, just how committed he is to this. You know, obviously it was a huge disappointment for him 2 years ago when he blew his ACL in what looked to be the year for the Cardinals. And then last year looked to be the year for the Cardinals. He hurt his finger. And flat out just didn't play that great in the playoff game against the Packers. So then you look around and go, okay, is this good? He's going to have to mount another great campaign, you know, whoop the league again with Larry Fitzgerald, who himself is not a spring chicken anymore. If they can go and do that, use John Brown, use David Johnson, use some of these younger weapons that they've got. Then absolutely. And I think the emergence of Johnson is going to help too, because with him and Chris Johnson, you have options to run on the ground, move out of the backfield. It doesn't have to be Carson Palmer shredding people deep over and over and over again in order for the offense to score points. So again, they're in that tough space, the space the Bengals have been in for a few years, the space that you get into when, okay, you're assumed 10, 11, 12 wins rolling out of bed, and all that matters is the playoffs. You have for the third year in a row this long slog towards, well, nothing matters until we get to the playoffs, except you still have to prepare like that. You still have to execute like that. You still have to treat each game like it's your Super Bowl in order to get there. Mentally, I think Carson Palmer has the makeup, and as long as his body doesn't betray him again, they can do it. But that's a question that you have to, you can't dismiss. You can't just write that off as, oh, no, it'll be fine, because it hasn't been fine each of the last 2 years.
I see we will end where we started, talking Chicago Cubs, the long slog to the playoffs. The Cubs have had things wrapped up for, what, 2 months, and they have managed to continue to dominate. We'll see if the Cardinals can be a similar type of story. Ty Schalter, Pro Football Weekly contributor, can find him at the Vice Sports and The Comeback, and also on Sirius XM, his radio show with Jason Cole. Ty, that was awesome stuff. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Arthur. Big honor and pleasure to be part of the PFW crew.
The pleasure is all ours, and be careful, because I'll make you come back if you're going to be so complimentary. We might have to get you back on a podcast here sooner than later. Is that doable?
Anytime.
Awesome. That's Ty Schalter, everyone, and make sure you're checking out his work at ProFootballWeekly.com and also those other various sites. We do appreciate Ty's time today, and that's going to wrap up this version of the Pro Football Weekly podcast.